I'm Catherine Hadro. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, feeling taxed. President Trump's wide-ranging tariffs take effect today. What it could mean for you and your wallet. One step closer, Russian President Vladimir Putin says he hopes to meet with President Trump as the White House pushes for peace in the Russian-Ukraine war. Catholics versus critics. Is the Shroud of Turin merely a work of art? Years of study suggest otherwise. Plus, a walk through history. We bring you a special look inside the Vatican Museum. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Cajetan. Our top story tonight. Donald Trump's sweeping worldwide tariffs are now fully in place. According to Yale's Budget Lab, this pushes American import duties to their highest level in a century. That means countries from every corner of the globe are now facing tariffs of 10% or higher. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Well, good evening. The higher import taxes, part of President Donald Trump's strategy to reduce the U.S. trade deficit and encourage foreign investment in America.
As the tariffs kick in, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says these are amazing numbers for the United States of America, and no one's retaliating. Everybody understands you've got to sell to the American consumer. The American consumer is the most powerful factor on the earth for the economy, and Donald Trump is harnessing it for the benefit of the American people. An executive order signed on July 31st established a 10% tariff on all imports, but some trading partners will face higher rates, including 41% on Syria, 19% on Indonesia and Thailand, 15% on South Korea, Japan, and the European Union. The president says the U.S. is going to be very rich.
The real levels of growth are going to be judged in a year from now when you start seeing some of these incredible plants, because we have car plants opening. They're coming in from Canada, from Mexico, and from all over the world. And they're coming in because they like the way the election worked out, but they also like the fact that they don't want to pay tariffs.
Just yesterday in the Oval Office, with Apple CEO Tim Cook standing near him, President Trump praising the tech company and telling reporters that Apple is increasing its investment in U.S. manufacturing by an additional $100 billion over the next 4 years, $600 billion total.
This is the largest investment Apple has ever made in America and anywhere else. And it's just an honor to have you. As you know, Apple's been an investor in other countries a little bit. I won't say which ones, but a couple. And they're coming home.
But the president also announcing 100% tariffs on non-U.S. computer chips.
We're going to be putting a very large tariff on chips and semiconductors. But the good news for companies like Apple is if you're building in the United States or have committed to build, without question committed to build in the United States, there will be no charge.
The president also posting on Truth Social this morning. The only thing that can stop America's greatness would be a radical left court that wants to see our country fail. Meanwhile, Toyota, the car company, says its profit tanked in the April to June quarter, 37%, and it lowered its full year earnings forecast largely because of the tariffs. President Trump has also vowed an additional 25% tariff on India as a sanction for its purchases of Russian oil. The director of an Indian luxury garment manufacturer and exporter warned Indian goods are going to be very expensive in the U.S. market.
It is a very drastic step that President Trump has taken. So this is going to be a very hard time for us.
Also tonight, the president signing an order that could change the composition of 401k plans, letting them invest in cryptocurrencies, private equity funds, and real estate. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
The president also says he will nominate a top economic advisor to the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. Stephen Miron is the chair of the White House's Council of Economic Advisors. He would serve in a temporary role for 4 months. The move comes after a Biden appointee said she is stepping down effective tomorrow. And joining us now to discuss is David Clement, the North American Affairs Director at the Consumer Choice Center. Thanks for being with us. President Trump says tariffs will encourage U.S. consumers to buy more American-made goods, increase the amount of tax raised, and boost investment. But are Americans having to pay the price to make that happen?
So, yes, because tariffs, generally speaking, are paid for by the country that implements the tariffs. And so it acts as a tax increase. An example would be if Americans are buying goods from India, let's say the garments that were featured prior to me joining here, it's American consumers who are going to pay the increased price. And so it's a tax increase on Americans. But it is important to highlight that the administration can't have it both ways, in the sense that they can't celebrate the revenue that tariffs are bringing in and then also talk about returning American jobs. Because if Americans are still buying foreign goods, that means that we're not shifting American consumer behavior to buy American. They're still buying those international goods. Mm. They're just paying more for them.
David, let's get into more specifics here. What types of products will Americans feel the weight of tariffs from the most?
So I think in the automobile sector, that is where you're going to see a big crunch. And there's a bit of a weird distortion. So if we look at the auto pact between Canada and the United States and the tariffs that are going to be implemented or are implemented on auto parts, those get impacted every time they cross the border. And we're going to see companies like Ford, even though they make cars in America, they make cars in America with Canadian and Mexican parts, they're still paying tariffs in the manufacturing process, where at the same time, the deals with Japan and Korea has some of the Asian car manufacturers actually potentially paying less. And so we have a weird distortion in terms of where the end impact is going to be. But it's also important to note that there's a tremendous lag on this. Because in the manufacturing sector and in most warehousing, we've known that tariffs are coming, and you see essentially pre-purchasing of goods prior to the tariff deadline. So you don't see the immediate impact of tariffs on American consumers. That does come weeks and months later.
Also looking ahead, could there be more tariffs on the way for things like pharmaceutical products, for example?
It's possible. It's possible that there could be tariffs on pharmaceuticals. I know that drug pricing has been a priority for the Trump administration, most favored nation. There have been fairly heavy criticism of that policy because the U.S. is largely responsible for almost all global pharmaceutical innovation. And so that is a significant trade-off, because the U.S. is the world's pharmacy when it comes to innovative medicine. And the Trump administration could run the risk of undermining that entrepreneurial and innovative process in the U.S. sector. If you're going to add tariffs on top of that, that could really put American patients in a crunch, because the drugs that aren't manufactured in the U.S. obviously come from elsewhere, and making those more expensive is not going to be the route to lower drug prices overall.
I have just a moment with you left, David, but what's your quick reaction to how the stock market reacted today?
I think it was mostly baked in already. Because the president has been forecasting tariffs since day one, a lot of the disruption has been baked in. I think we're going to have to see down the road, weeks and months down the road, to see it really have an impact on the market, but I think it certainly will.
David Clement, thank you so much for your time and insights.
Thank you.
Turning now to Russia, the Kremlin says a meeting between Presidents Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin has been agreed upon in principle and will happen in the coming days, and offered a possible location for the talks.
We have many friends who are ready to help us organize events of this kind. One of our friends is the President of the United Arab Emirates. I think we will decide, but this will be one of the suitable, quite suitable places.
Initially, the president told European leaders he would meet with Putin and follow up shortly with a meeting, both the Russian and Ukrainian presidents. But Putin pushed back on that, saying that he has nothing against it, provided, quote, certain conditions are created for this to happen. In the past, Putin has described Ukraine's government as illegitimate, saying he would only meet Zelensky during the final phase of negotiations. And the clock is ticking for Russian President Vladimir Putin. President Trump has set a Friday deadline for Russia to either stop the killing in Ukraine that's been going on for over 3 years or face more sanctions on its economy, plus stiffer penalties on countries who buy Russian oil and gas. Lawmakers from both parties are backing the president. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest.
Good evening. Both the president and Congress say it's time to get tough. Russia's President Vladimir Putin continues to bomb Ukrainian cities, and Ukrainian forces continue to lose ground. The new sanctions would target two of the largest economies in the world, China and India, the main buyers of Russian oil.
If you continue to prop up Putin's war machine by buying cheap Russian oil, we're going to tariff your economy in the United States. You have to pick between the U.S. economy and helping Putin.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to get Putin to the table.
President Trump took a key step already when he imposed an additional 25% tariff on imports from India. Senator Graham and Richard Blumenthal are teaming up on a bill to support more sanctions. They believe it's the best hope to force Russian President Putin to end the war.
They are scorching, they're bone-crushing. Vladimir Putin should get the word. If he wants to come to the table, now is the time. Otherwise, his economy is going to be hit hard.
So far, the bill has 85 co-sponsors, including Senator Ted Budd of North Carolina.
But you have to look at particular ones and make sure that they actually achieve what we're after. Yes, you have to put these sanctions in place, and I think they'll be effective.
But some are skeptical. President Trump will follow through, citing previous deadlines that were abandoned.
We get to these deadlines, they'll say that we had significant talks, we got good talks, and so now we'll wait till September to see whether or not Russia does some change. That's what has happened before, and I see no evidence of doing anything differently.
Other Democrats are relieved that President Trump has taken a tougher stance with the Russian president.
And I'm really delighted that President Trump gets the plan here, that Putin is the aggressor and a pretty evil guy. So I'm very, very supportive of the president's change of heart here.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune says he's allowing the president to take the lead, but he's ready to take up the sanctions bill whenever President Trump gives him the green light. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
President Trump says he has directed the Commerce Department to create a new U.S. census that excludes people who are in the country illegally. He says it will be based on data from the 2024 presidential election. It's unclear if the president is planning the changes for the 2030 census or is taking an additional count to take place before that. Changes to the census could impact the balance of power in states and the House of Representatives, which are based on total population. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel intends to remove Hamas from Gaza and eventually hand over the territory.
Are you saying today that you will take control of the entire 26-mile Gaza Strip as it was 20 years ago to this month in 2005?
Well, we don't want to keep it. We want to have a security perimeter. We don't want to govern it. We don't want to be there as a governing body. We want to hand it over to Arab forces.
In an interview with Fox News, the Israeli prime minister says he wants the ownership of Gaza to pass to someone not advocating for the destruction of Israel. It would require an expansion of military operations in the already pummeled Gaza Strip. This comes as the crisis to get much-needed aid to Palestinians carries on. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including Shrouded in Mystery. Another so-called study claims to reveal the truth about the Shroud of Turin, but does it hold water? We speak to a Catholic expert, and a new mural of Pope Francis towers over the streets of this one city. We'll tell you where. Pushback tonight against a Brazilian artist's claims the Shroud of Turin is not authentic. He says the depiction of the body of Christ on the shroud was likely based on a statue. The claims appeared last month in a scholarly journal. The artist also says the shroud may have been a medieval work of art. Countless Catholics and other Christians around the world believe it is the authentic burial cloth of Jesus Christ, and that the shroud was wrapped around his body after his crucifixion and marked by his unmistakable face and form. For more, let's bring in Professor Cheryl White. She's a professor at Louisiana State University and an internationally recognized shroud expert. Thanks so much for being with us. The latest criticism is that the Shroud of Turin is nothing more than a forgery, with claims it was made by a low relief model. What does that mean? What's being claimed here?
This is actually quite old news. It's something that people have tried to propose as a hypothesis before, that you can take a cloth and lay it across a three-dimensional model, and by some application of other media, you can achieve a result like the shroud. Unfortunately, of course, that's already been demonstrated, or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, it's already been demonstrated that that is a completely superficial image, and it does not match all the complexity of the image on the Shroud of Turin.
The authenticity of the shroud has been debated for as long as it's existed and been discovered. Where are we with the latest scientific studies on the shroud?
The last scientific study on the shroud, the official peer-reviewed science, all that came out in the early 1980s in peer-reviewed journals, has only been substantiated by every succeeding truly peer-reviewed scientific investigation. The most recent we have indicates that we could be talking about going back to a first century date due to some new non-destructive environmental dating methods. And also, of course, the 2017-2019 studies that brought into serious question the carbon-14 dating of 1988 has opened up that very real possibility for us that we're talking about a much older linen. So I think that what we're seeing is consistency in its mystery and its complexity, that science still cannot answer the primary question of how the image was formed.
And finally, Professor, why is the fascination with the shroud so enduring?
I think that it is an incredibly complex mystery. And you know, objects of the material world always seem to give up their mysteries. Here we confront an image on a cloth, an image that appears photographic, has photographic qualities on something that is not photographic material, a linen, with a spatial body relationship in the linen itself. There's actually an encoded message there in the image. And I think that it's science, the inability of science to really address with finality the primary questions we all have about it that continue to pull us into the mystery. It is a mystery.
Absolutely. Professor Cheryl White, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine.
Arkansas's Attorney General is leading an initiative to ban so-called abortion shield laws. Republican Tim Griffin and 15 other state attorneys general are asking Congress to step in and stop the shield laws. Those measures protect abortion businesses in states where abortion is legal from any legal consequences if they commit abortions on women from states where abortion is banned. Griffin says the response has been powerful and the initiative has momentum.
I think there's a real interest in taking action on this, and we may well get legislation in the end that reflects the request of this letter. So it's been outstanding, and it's just another example of how the system can work when a bunch of AGs get together. Our voices is much, much stronger.
A group advocating for people with disabilities to have a larger role in the church and in society is holding its Hope Conference this week in Salt Lake City, Utah. The National Catholic Partnership on Disability works with dioceses and parishes on behalf of people with hearing impairment, vision loss, or other physical and mental disabilities. Speakers include Bishop Brendan Cahill from the Diocese of Victoria, Texas. The head of the organization says there are other high-profile speakers as well.
Mary O'Mara, Diocesan Director of Disability and Deaf Ministries, is the keynote on Friday. If followed up on Saturday with Jason Shanks from the National Eucharistic Congress is speaking on, is our keynote on Saturday. And in between, we have about 40 other presenters that are going to run through a variety of disability-related topics for our participants.
The NCPD began in 1982 through work by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. The initiative focuses on people who are physically disadvantaged or are suffering from mental illness and tries to make the church more accessible to them.
They are coming back to the church because I think the church, as long as they are provided with the tools and the resources to be able to understand the need. Oftentimes what keeps us not doing something is a lack of knowledge. So that word fear, false events appearing real, can imply sometimes that we don't do something because we are a little afraid we're going to make a misstep. So as much as they have support like NCPD and others that can say, no, these resources are here, we can show you skills and strategies that will be able to make you be a more welcoming community.
For more information or to follow the conference starting today, visit ncpd.org. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, more than just an art collection. We'll take you behind the scenes at the Vatican Museums and show you what makes them different than all the other museums in the world. Plus, it's taller than 100 feet high, but can you guess where you can find this mural of Pope Francis? We have the answer. This wonderful piece of art depicting Pope Francis. The city of La Plata, Argentina, inaugurated the world's largest mural dedicated to the late Holy Father. Standing at more than 160 feet, the mural is in front of the La Plata Cathedral and adds to the visual identity of the city. There is endless restoration work to maintain the iconic rooms of the Vatican Museums. They welcome millions of tourists and took center stage as host of the conclave. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Valentina De Donato has more.
We are always ready and we do care daily to this holy place. And of course, the maintenance is more and more of the rest of the 7 miles of the museums because we know and we are aware of the importance of this place.
Unlike some of the world's most important museums, the Vatican Museums have a mission that goes beyond preservation and display. It's about evangelizing through beauty, art, and history.
That's such a beautiful thing to remember, that these rooms, which you think, oh, they're rooms, it's art, but there's spiritual significance here.
Our mission is a little different mission, a very focused mission on the idea of sharing not only our heritage in terms of history and in terms of creation of art, but in terms of what the spirituality and the faith produce this work of art.
Because of the importance of the function of the museums in the life of the church, its restoration and conservation are crucial.
No doubt that apart from the conclave, this is probably one of the most important holy places in the world. So we do care daily and annually in a very, very strong way. We are always ready to make it used by the Pope, by the Cardinals, if they want it.
Marco Maggi, head of conservation of the Vatican Museums, led the momentous conservation work in the Sistine Chapel ahead of the conclave by proactively addressing environmental factors like temperature, humidity, and light.
It was a very, very moving moment because the Sistine Chapel is actually a chapel. It's one of the apostolic palaces chapel. During the conclave, our office, together with other office of the museum, work together to prepare so an important event for the Catholic Church and for the world.
Marco Maggi's background as an archaeologist helps him bridge the world of the past and present for the future generations to also be able to catch a glimpse of the divine.
Our work can become a witness of faith. We work to make visible, to the pilgrims and visitors the peculiar God's light. That's our mission, to allows everyone to catch that light.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Beautiful. Today, the church celebrates St. Cajetan, an Italian priest who dedicated his life to the sick and the poor. Cajetan was born in 1480 to a noble family in northern Italy. He became a lawyer and a priest and worked in the Roman Curia under Pope Julius II. He then helped to establish the Congregation of Clerks Regular, the Theatines in Naples, to care for orphans, the poor, and the sick. At the same time, he promoted true reform in the church and fought against the spread of Protestantism in Italy. He died in 1547 and was canonized in 1671 by Pope Clement X. He's the patron saint of workers and of the unemployed. St. Cajetan, pray for us. And finally tonight, a follow-up more than 20 years in the making is headed to theaters in 2027 with an interesting twist. Mel Gibson's long-awaited sequel to The Passion of Christ is set to be split into two parts. The Resurrection of the Christ Part 1 will release on Good Friday 2027, while Part 2 is slated for the Feast of the Ascension. Specific details of the film have not been released, but Jim Caviezel will be reprising the role of Jesus. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Catherine Hadro. Good night, and God bless.